second ever episode. And this week we have a very exciting, a very special episode for all of you. And that is the case because I will be reviewing two different films and one TV show. The two movies that I will be reviewing will be, first of all, the newest entry from the Despicable Me franchise, which is Minions: The Rise of Gru. And the second film is A24's newest movie, which is Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. Now, as for TV shows, I will be reviewing the highly anticipated season 4 of Stranger Things. That being said, you know, something very important about this show is that the whole episode will be accompanied by music that is somehow related to a movie or a TV show being discussed. And this week, this whole episode is going to be accompanied by music from the hit show Stranger Things. Before we jump into the reviews, let's begin by going into a little musical break and listening to one of the songs from Stranger Things. And let's begin by listening to a song from season 1 of Stranger Things. And this is perhaps one of the most popular songs of the show. And that song is Should I Stay or Should I Go? And here it is.
To let me know, should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine and next is black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know, should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So come on and let me know. These indecisions bugger me.
Indecision, they molest us.
If you don't want me, set me free.
Say when you kill us, you commit.
Exactly whom I'm supposed to be. Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow? Should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So you gotta let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow? Should I stay or should I go now?
Looking to get a reliable and affordable used bike? Need a repair or service to your current ride?
Come to the Bike Kitchen, UBC's full-service community bike shop, located in room 36 of the UBC Life building. Our hours are Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
If you buy a bike from us, bring it back when you're done using it, and we'll give you half of your money back, as long as you took care of it. If it needs repairs, we'll split the cost with you.
Yep, you heard us right. We'll give you crisp dollar bills for half the original price of any used bike that you buy from us, minus the cost of repairs.
For more information about our buyback policy and to stay up to date on any COVID-19 inspired changes, Find us online at thebikekitchen.com.
Welcome back to Take One. This is your host, Juan Pablo Saa, talking to you from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I hope you all enjoyed that song. It's one of my all-time favorites from Stranger Things. And now, it's time we jump into our first review, which is Minions, The Rise of Gru. So Minions, The Rise of Gru is the fifth film in the Despicable Me franchise. It is a sequel to 2015's Minions, but it is also a prequel to the Despicable Me trilogy. And right off the bat, before I give you all my thoughts on this film and, you know, before I let you all know how I felt in regards to Minion, The Rise of Gru, I will first begin by telling you all what my relationship is with this franchise. When it comes to the first Despicable Me film, I remember really enjoying it. That said, I haven't seen this film in a while, so I don't really know if I enjoyed it because it was genuinely good or just because I was a child. And, you know, when you're a child, your standards of quality are a lot lower, I guess. Same goes for the second Despicable Me film. I remember really enjoying that one when it came out in theaters. But once again, I don't know. I don't know if it's really because it's good or just because I was a child. That said, when 2015 Minions came out, I think that was the turning point for me. And I really hated that film. I hated 2015 Minions. I thought it was insufferable and just, you know, such a cash grab and, you know, so soulless and so plain and so shallow. I absolutely hated that movie. Same with Despicable Me 3. I really, really, really hated that film. Therefore, when they announced they were making a new film, that it was going to be a sequel to 2015's Minions, and when I heard that pretty much the same team who worked in the first Minion film was coming back for the second one, I don't know, my expectations weren't that high. You know, my expectations were extremely low, if I'm being honest. I was pretty much expecting a film just as bad as the first one. That said, you know, coming into this film, I came in with an open mind, even though it was pretty much the same team, and even though my expectations were rock bottom, I was hoping that maybe I was wrong, and I was hoping that maybe this film would surprise me and would show me that I was missing something all this time about the Minions. That wasn't the case. My expectations were met exactly where I had them. I think the best way I could put it is, if you saw the trailer for Minions: The Rise of Gru, and you were entertained by the trailer, and you thought the trailer was funny and great, then good for you. Go watch this film, you're gonna love it. But if you saw the trailer and you were like, yikes, this looks like another painful 1 hour and 30 minutes, then it's not gonna be for you. Now, the first element of the movie that I would like to touch upon is the story. And the main thing I will say is that the story in this film, it just doesn't matter. The story doesn't matter. You know, the story in this film is just something that gets in between minions talking gibberish and making fart noises. It's not important, it's not special, there's absolutely nothing special about the story. It's just a device for minions to make their silly little jokes and make their silly little faces and make their silly little expressions, but it doesn't matter. It's time I touch upon my second element and the second thing that I want to talk in regards to this film, and that thing is the minions. And in regards to the minions, I don't know, I find them extremely annoying. I used to find them very charming, and I used to like them a lot in the first and the second Despicable Me film. That said, not anymore. You know, in the past couple of years, the market has been so saturated with minions, and minions have been shoved down our throats everywhere that I just can't stand them anymore. I find them egregious, and I find them, yeah, very, very annoying. I think minions, you know, as characters, they work best in small doses, you know, like in Despicable Me 1 and in Despicable Me 2. They are secondary characters. They don't have their own storylines. They are just characters that you see in the background doing silly little things and doing slapstick humor, but they are not the focus of the film. And that is the reason why the first two Despicable Me films work and why the minions work in those films. But that's not the case in 2015 Minions or in Minions: The Rise of Gru. Minions are front and center, and these characters that are a lot better as secondary characters and that are a lot better in small doses, they are the focus of the film, and it just becomes tiresome. It becomes very tiring, and it becomes very, very annoying, at least for me. Now, the next element that I would like to discuss when talking about this film would be the villains. And in regards to the villains, okay, I guess I should begin with the positives. And in terms of the positives, I think the villains have some great designs. I think they are very inventive, very imaginative. I think their abilities are really cool. And, you know, in a better film, these villains could have been great. There's one villain that I would like to highlight, and that is a villain that is literally a nun. There's literally a nun who levitates. I thought she was cool. I thought she was, like, by far one of the best part of the films. That said, even though the villains are visually interesting and have some cool abilities, they are just so dull, so surface level, and so one-dimensional that it is... I don't think there's even a point in having them in the film. They're just there. Yeah, after having watched the movie, I would honestly say that I know absolutely nothing about any of them. They're just placeholder villains. They're just villains that come here, do villainous stuff, and that's it. And, you know, it gets even more frustrating because after I saw this film, I was like, yeah, villains were forgettable, but, you know, that's it. It's fine. It's a Minions film. What was I expecting? But then I opened IMDb and I started reading about the actors that play those villains in the film. And I realized that some of those villains are played by Jean-Claude Van Damme, who was an action star from the 90s who, you know, acted in films such as Street Fighter and other action films from the decade. You have Dolph Lundgren, who is most famous for playing Ivan Drago in Rocky IV. And you also have Danny Trejo, who is Machete himself, acting in this film, voicing these villains. And, you know, this is a very fun group of actors. I can see a better director, a better script, and a better movie doing some great things with these three actors coming together to voice villains. But that is not what this movie does. Like, I am not exaggerating when I say that each of these characters have, at most, three lines of dialogue. Like, I honestly don't think I'm exaggerating. What a waste. What a waste of these actors. What a waste of these character designs. They were just nothings. They amount to nothing. It was very, very frustrating. But once again, it's Minions: The Rise of Gru. What was I expecting? You know, they gave me exactly what I thought I was going to get. So yeah, I guess my overarching thoughts in regards to Minions: The Rise of Gru is that this was a very bad film. And I know what you may be thinking. You might be thinking, like, Juan, come on, it's a children film. Like, don't be so harsh. You're not the target audience. This movie's made for children. Just, you know, take a chill pill. Enjoy it for what it is. And first of all, I'll just make it very clear, I hate that excuse. I hate that every time that a dumb movie comes out, people defend it by saying, oh, it's just for children, don't worry about it, it's just for children. What does that mean? You know, does that mean that, you know, when something is made for children, then it's okay for it to be bad, then it's okay for it to be rubbish? No. No. Just because a movie is made for children doesn't mean it has to be trash. Take, for example, Pixar and Disney animated films. These studios have shown us time and time again that you can make children films that are entertaining and enjoyable for people of all ages, not just 4-year-olds who laugh at fart jokes. And they have also shown us time and time again that you can make films for children that are just as smart as the films that are quote-unquote made for adults. Minions: The Rise of Gru is not one of these films. It is not enjoyable for people of all ages, and it is extremely dumb. So yeah, the film sucked. I don't know what to say. It was exactly what I was expecting. It was just as bad as the first Minion films. I didn't like it. I thought it was a very, very bad film. That said, even though the movie sucked, the experience of watching it, now that's something completely different. The experience was really fucking great. I don't know if you've been in the internet in the past couple of weeks, but there are some memes making the rounds in the Instagrams, in the different social media platforms, and these are memes of people saying that they are going to go watch Minions: The Rise of Gru, fully dressed up, wearing suits and ties, and you know, the memes are funny, I like the memes, I think they're great, I think they're harmless. That said, I never expected that these memes would actually translate into real life. You know, whenever I started seeing these memes, I was like, haha, yeah, this is funny, but this is something that's going to live exclusively on the internet, and nothing's really going to happen in real life. Boy, was I mistaken. Yesterday, at 7 p.m, I went to watch Minions: The Rise of Gru, and holy... I was buying a taco. I was buying a freaking taco, waiting for the film to begin. I was standing outside the theater, peacefully waiting for my taco, and then I just start seeing groups and groups of teenagers going up the escalators, fully dressed, wearing suits and ties, all going towards the movie. And at that point, I knew that those people were going to watch Minions: The Rise of Gru, and that I was in for an experience that I would never forget. So yeah, after I got my taco, great taco, by the way, I went into the theater and, first of all, it was packed. But it wasn't just packed by little children and families. It was also packed by teenagers, fully dressed up, that were cheering and clapping because they were going to watch Minions: The Rise of Gru. I couldn't believe what was happening, but f*** it, I was in for the ride. So the movie began, and as soon as the movie began, people started clapping. As soon as the Illumination logo appeared, people started cheering. And the first time when Gru appeared on screen and when they introduced this character, people lost their f***ing minds. I felt like I was leaving on the Twilight Zone. Like, what is happening? How is Minions: The Rise of Gru the movie that makes people clap and cheer in a movie theater? Anyways, you know, the film eventually ended. I was very torn. You know, a part of me was telling me the film was absolute trash, but another part of me was just completely mesmerized by the insane behavior of moviegoers that were taking Minions: The Rise of Gru extremely seriously, and as if it was like this very prestigious, incredible experience. As soon as the movie ended, people started standing up and clapping and cheering, and they gave Minions: The Rise of Gru a freaking standing ovation. That's the world we live in, I guess. So yeah, coming back into my thoughts about this film and wrapping up this whole review, as a cult experience, as a cult film experience, Minions: The Rise of Gru was a lot of fun. As a movie, though, this film was not good. And if I were to give it a score, I would give it a 3 out of 10, which means I think this film was very, very bad. But yeah, that was my review of Minions: The Rise of Gru. If you go watch it, let us know what you think. If you go watch it wearing a suit and a tie, good for you. I hope you have fun. I hope other people join you and clap and cheer. But yeah, fascinating experience, but terrible film. Okay, now that that review is out of the way, I think it is time we go into another musical break. And this time we will listen to another song from Stranger Things. And this is another one of my favorites from the show. This is a song that was composed for the show, part of its original soundtrack, and this song is Kids, and here it is.
Thank you. him. Narcotics King. Big time racketeer. Back in full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life? Perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV? My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future, and those forgotten classics that need a little rescue. Loading Head Movies, Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Take One. This is your host, Juan Pablo Sá, talking to you from CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. I hope you'll enjoy that musical break, but now it is time that we jump into our second review, and this is a review for A24's newest film, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. So, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On was directed by Dean Fleischer-Camp, and it stars Jenny Slate as the voice of Marcel. And first of all, for those of you who don't know, this film is based on a series of short films that were made by both of them, Dean Fleischer-Camp and Jenny Slate, around a decade ago. And I will start off by saying that I had never heard of these short films before this film was announced. That said, I saw them recently in preparation for this movie, and I really liked them. I thought they were extremely charming and, yeah, just a lot of fun and, you know, little, silly, funny short films that I really enjoyed. That said, after seeing those short films, you know, knowing that there was a feature-length film coming out based on these short films, I was a bit hesitant and I was a bit worried because I didn't know how well those short films would translate into a feature-length film. Like, the short films are very meandering, they're very plotless. You're basically just spending time with this little seashell called Marcel. And yeah, you hear this shell talk and, you know, tell you about their life and what they do in their day-to-day life. But it's not really plot-heavy, and I would never have seen those shorts and been like, oh yeah, this one, let's make a film about this one. So yeah, I was a bit concerned, and coming into this film, I didn't know if they were gonna, you know, force a contrived plot into this story just so that they could pad in a 90-minute runtime. I didn't really know what they were gonna do. That said, I was very pleasantly surprised, and I thought Marcel the Shell with Shoes On was a great, great film. So this movie, for those of you who don't know, it follows a cute little shell with shoes on, and his name is Marcel. And, you know, throughout the film, you follow this character as he looks for his missing family. And right off the bat, the first thing I want to mention is the studio behind this film, which is A24. For those of you who don't know, A24 is also the studio behind other films such as Hereditary, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Moonlight, Lady Bird, Uncut Gems, Ex Machina, and many, many, many more. And I'll start off by saying that I really love A24. I think A24 films are very interesting. And, you know, they have this special quality that whether you love or hate an A24 film, you will never regret watching them. A24 films are very interesting in the way they blend genres and in the way they blend different genres and different moods and different themes together. They also tend to challenge traditional conventions associated to cinema and associated to Hollywood cinema specifically. And the best A24 films are also extremely thought-provoking and extremely, extremely memorable. I firmly believe that Marcel the Shell with Shoes On is one of those great A24 films that I will remember for the rest of my life. That said, this is extremely different from most other A24 films. Marcel the Shell with Shoes On is an extremely small film with an extremely small scale with an extremely little story, which makes sense because in the middle of it all, you have an extremely little character who is this little cute shell called Marcel. This is a film about celebrating the little things. This is a film about finding beauty in the mundane. This is a film that is very slow, and some would even call it uneventful. But in a way, I just found it charming. And in a way, I just thought that, you know, those things is what made this film so, so special. You shouldn't come into this film expecting a complex narrative with twists and turns, because that is not what this movie is. You should come in expecting to spend some time with one character and his name is Marcel. and spending time with him is frankly delightful. Another element that I would like to highlight when it comes to this film is the fact that the whole movie is told using the mockumentary style. You know, in this film, you follow this aspiring filmmaker who stumbles upon Marcel and then decides to film a documentary of this little shell with shoes on as he looks for his family. And I thought the fact, you know, the idea of making this whole movie a mockumentary was an extremely inspired idea, was very, very funny, and it allowed for some hilarious gags and for some very funny moments. That being said, let's move on into our next element of discussion, which is Marcel, the main character, the protagonist. And when it comes to Marcel, I will just say that I found him extremely, extremely charming. The character design is great, it's extremely minimalist, but also very, very genius. And the voice acting by Jenny Slate was absolutely phenomenal. I think she killed it. She kicked it out of the park with her performance of Marcel. Her voice acting was great. It was sweet. It was tender. It was soft. It was nice. It was very, very charming. That being said, I need to talk about another character from this film, and that is Marcel's grandma, who is Grandma Connie. And I thought this character was great. It really touched me. It really left an impact. Grandma Connie throughout the film, she is just extremely sweet, extremely kind, very tender, very selfless, and very, very caring. Throughout the film, she wants nothing more than to see her grandson succeed, and that really touched me, and that really connected with me. She reminded me a lot of my grandmother, and yeah, I really connected with all of her scenes and all of her discussions with Marcel. That said, Grandma Connie is not the only member from the Marcel family that I would like to highlight. I need to mention every other member from Marcel's family, because I thought they were all really, really great. Even though we don't really get to spend much time with other members of his family apart from Grandma Connie, their designs are amazing, they are very creative, they are very visually appealing, they are very charming, they're very unique, and yeah, they're just cool additions to the film that make this world seem a lot richer and a lot, you know, cooler, I guess. So in conclusion, I thought Marcel the Shell with Shoes On was an extremely charming film. It is small in scale, but big in heart. And if I were to give it a score from 1 to 10, I would give it an 8 out of 10, which means I think this film was absolutely great. So yeah, that's it for my review of Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. If you watch it, let us know what you think in the comments below. But now, before we move on to the next review, which is the review of Stranger Things Season 4, let's jump into another musical break, and this time let's listen to a song from Season 2 of Stranger Things, Every Breath You Take. And here it is. We'll be right back.
Tribe Called Red is The Hallucination with their new record, One More Saturday Night, featuring Javier Mighty, Tanya Tagak, and more, out now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Take One. This is your host, Juan Pablo Sa, talking to you from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I really hope you enjoyed that musical break, but now it is time to jump into our third and final review for the day, and that is a review for Stranger Things Season 4. So when it comes to Stranger Things Season 4, the first thing I will say is that this will be, without a doubt, a spoiler review. So if you haven't seen the show, if you're not up to date, and if you haven't seen Part 2 of Stranger Things Season 4, pause this video, leave right now, watch the show, and then come back and finish watching this review. Now that that's out of the way, from here on out, I will be discussing spoilers. You have been warned. And I will begin by saying that I thought Stranger Things Season 4 was amazing. I honestly believe this is the best season of Stranger Things since Season 1. And the main reason why I think this season was so, so good is without a doubt the villain. Vecna is absolutely amazing. And, you know, it is no secret that Stranger Things has always had sort of a villain problem. You know, in Season 1, you had the Demogorgon, and the Demogorgon was fine, but, you know, I don't think anyone would be like, yes, the Demogorgon is one of the greatest villains of all time. Then in Season 2, you have the Mind Flayer, who was, he was alright, but he was a bit uninteresting. You know, he was just a big, evil Black Cloud who was evil for the sake of being evil. And then in Season 3, you just gave us, like, this weird, fleshy blob thing that was like a physical manifestation of the Mind Flayer in the real world. And that one just felt very repetitive and very uninspired. So yeah, Stranger Things throughout the seasons, they've had a villain problem. But that is all fixed in Season 4 because Vecna, holy... Let me tell you about Vecna. This is the best villain the show has ever seen. I thought the design of Vecna was really, really great. And the practical effects that they used to turn Vecna into reality were just absolutely amazing and absolutely jaw-dropping. Yeah, his look is just very imposing and very scary and very creepy, and it is also very reminiscent of other classical horror villains, such as Freddy Krueger from films such as Nightmare on Elm Street. And, you know, this is definitely not a coincidence, especially considering the fact that in the first couple of episodes of Season 4, we literally see a Freddy Krueger cutout in the video store where Steve and Robin work. So yeah, in terms of the design, I thought Vecna was amazing. The character design was great, the practical design was great, the acting was really, really great. But now, it's time we jump into our next element of Vecna, and those are the abilities. In regards to the abilities, I thought Vecna's powers were really, really cool. They were very fun, they were very inventive. I love the way in which Vecna just goes into people's minds, goes into their memories, and just, you know, brings back the most traumatic, the most f***ed up moments of their past, and just, you know, brings them back just to haunt them and to scare them and to play with them before he kills them. That was really cool, really inventive, really imaginative, and honestly, a bit scary. It also reminded me of classic horror villains such as Freddy Krueger, once again, and Pennywise, you know, because both of these villains also go into people's minds and, you know, gives them weird visions and makes them see weird things. So in that regards, in the terms of the abilities and the powers of Vecna, I thought Vecna was really, really great. Now, the last element that I would like to discuss when it comes to talking about Vecna would be the story elements and how Vecna fits into the overall narrative of Stranger Things Season 4. So, when I began watching Stranger Things Season 4, I was a bit confused by how Vecna was going to tie into certain storylines. Like, it was obvious how Vecna was going to tie into, you know, the Hawkins storyline, but I had no idea how he was going to tie into the Eleven storyline and all the flashbacks she was having, or how he was going to tie into Victor Creel and everything they were setting up. That said, I was very surprised. I was very pleasantly surprised by the way they did it. And I thought all the reveals about Vecna, all the twists and turns about these characters were just absolutely fantastic. Episode 7, when they finally begin peeling down the layers and they start letting you know who Vecna is and where he comes from, that episode was fantastic. And all of those plot twists, I think, worked really, really well. Like when they finally reveal that Vecna is not only one, the first telekinetic child that Dr. Brenner experimented with, but he's also Henry Creel, the son of Victor Creel, who is, you know, who is now in prison for supposedly killing his family. And not only that, but they reveal that Victor Creel didn't kill his family, but his son did. Victor Creel's son killed his own mother and his own sister, and then just, you know, turned into this horrible monster while his father was rotten in a prison cell. That just gave me chills, and it made my skin crawl, and I really, really liked it. So in terms of the story elements, I thought all the twists about Vecna were done really, really great. And the reason why I love all of this reveal so much is because all the clues are there. If you rewatch this episode, if you watch Stranger Things Season 4 once again from the beginning, you'll see all the clues. You'll see all the hints that they give you so that you're able to piece together all of this pieces of the puzzle and, you know, come up with the answers by yourself. That said, you still don't do it. And that is, that's what makes this mystery so freaking great. That said, if there is one thing I would criticize from Vecna, would be his motivations. I felt like Vecna's motivations were a bit iffy. That said, this is not a problem, because Vecna's still alive. At the end of Season 4, they haven't killed Vecna, and I'm sure he's going to be back in Season 5. And I'm looking forward to seeing how they keep exploring this character and how they keep, you know, giving us information about his backstory and about what he's been through. But yeah, that's it in regards to Vecna. Great character, great antagonist, and the best villain Stranger Things has ever seen. I will now start discussing the different storylines of Season 4, and I will begin by discussing a storyline that was by far the weakest, at least if you ask me. And this storyline is the storyline of everything that is happening in California and everything that is happening with Mike, Will, Jonathan, and Argyle. And yeah, as I said, this storyline was by far the weakest. Like, some characters that used to be the heart and soul of Stranger Things are just sidelined in such a way that I can't even comprehend. Like, Mike, you know, he used to be the protagonist of the show. He used to be the most important person, I guess. In Season 1, he was the protagonist. That said, here in Season 4, you know, it just becomes painfully obvious that without Eleven, without his friends, and without Hawkins, Mike isn't really that interesting. And he's just, like, you know, a dull boyfriend character. So, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, he's fine, but, you know, he's not great. Now, in terms of the other characters of this storyline, Will was also sidelined a lot, especially after in Season 1 and Season 2, Will was pretty much the focus of the show. Season 1 was all about rescuing Will from the Upside Down. Season 2 was all about saving Will from getting murdered by the Mind Flayer. And now in Season 4, he's going on a road trip with Mike and Jonathan and Argyle. And, you know, it's fine. And, you know, I like what he did, and I love Noah Schnapp's performance. I felt the last two episodes were really, really great, and he really gave some great performances. But yeah, Will was just very sidelined in this season, especially. That being said, I am very excited about Season 5, because I believe that in this season, they've set up a lot of stuff about Will's character that I hope comes back in a big way in Season 5. Like, you know, they've set up all the stuff about Will potentially, you know, being gay and, you know, having feelings for Mike. That's really exciting, and I can't wait to see where that goes. And they've also set up all the stuff about Will still having a connection with the Upside Down and still sensing Vecna slash the Mind Flayer when he finally arrives to Hawkins. So that's exciting. And I'm looking forward to see what they do with this character in the next season. Now, the next character of this group that I would like to discuss would be Jonathan, who Jonathan is Will's older brother. And I really don't know what happened to Jonathan. I used to really like Jonathan. I used to think he was great. But in this season, he was just boring and uninteresting, if I'm being honest. Like, yeah, they just turned his character into, like, a weird caricature that all he does is just get high with Argyle and lie to Nancy, which, I don't know. His story wasn't the great, but also what they did with the character, it wasn't that interesting. Now, the final character from this storyline that I need to mention is without a doubt Argyle. So Argyle is a new addition to Season 4. He hasn't been in any of the previous three seasons. And I thought Argyle stole the show. Every single time that we caught back to the California gang and every time that we caught back to the storyline, Argyle was always the best part, at least if you ask me. He was very funny. He was very charming. He was just overall a really great character. And now that we're in the topic of characters that are introduced after Season 1, I will just say that I think Stranger Things does a great job of introducing new characters progressively every single season. Like, usually when a show introduces new characters, like, it's a bit iffy, and it's not that great because they usually don't feel as if they fit into the narrative that well. That said, Stranger Things has managed to find a way to keep progressively introducing new characters that not only feel like part of this world, but also feel as if they fit in perfectly with the groups of people and with the characters that they've already established. Like, in season 2, they introduced Max, and Max was excellent. You know, she fit in with the group perfectly from the get-go. Then in season 3, they introduced Robin, and once again, Robin was really, really cool. And now in season 4, they've introduced Argyle and other characters that I will mention, you know, in a couple of minutes. And I thought they killed it. I thought Argyle was great. I thought his performance was great. I thought he was very funny. And yeah, once again, I think he was the saving grace of the California gang storyline. Now, the second storyline that I would like to discuss is the story of everything that is going on in Russia. And this story involves characters such as Hopper, Joyce, Murray, and newcomers Dimitri and Yuri. And right from the get-go, I will say that I really like the story. I felt that this story was a very nice breather from all the child stuff that was happening in the United States. Like, sure, you know, this is Stranger Things and the children are the main character, but I really like the fact that we still get, like, one storyline that is just focused on adults, and it's like a prison break, and it's, like, a lot darker, and you literally get, you know, Hopper crying and breaking his feet intentionally just so that he can escape this Russian gulag. So I felt like the contrast in between the different storylines really helped, and it made this story stand out and feel like, yeah, like a nice breather from all the childish stuff, or, yeah, children storylines that were happening in the States. Now, when it comes to Hopper, the first thing I will say is that I am very glad to see that he's still alive. I was very sad when he supposedly died at the end of season 3, so I'm very happy to see that he's still kicking it and that, you know, he's still nice and well. That said, I wasn't the biggest fan of the explanation they gave us as to how Hopper survived the explosion. Like, you know, coming into season 4, of course, I knew Hopper was still alive because they revealed it in a teaser, I think. But I thought he jumped into the portal and, you know, that's how he ended up in Russia or something like that. But I really don't like the fact that the way he survived is that he just jumped down there, and Joyce and Murray and everyone else at the end of season 3, they just decided not to look. They decided not to check to see if Hopper's body was anywhere to be seen. You know, they just left. And then the Russians found him and took him to Russia. I don't know. That felt a bit cheap, a bit iffy. That being said, you know, that's just the very beginning. That's just the explanation of how he's in Russia. The point is that he's in Russia, and all of his scenes in Russia are really, really great. And David Harbour, holy, David Harbour kills it as Hopper. You know, there's this one scene where Hopper is crying as he eats a jar of peanut butter, and that scene was, you know, it really touched me. It really moved me. And there are some great moments for this character. You know, there are moments where Hopper is discussing his backstory and is discussing everything that happened with his daughter and in the Vietnam War. You know, they give us some important information to Hopper's backstory that make his character a lot richer and a lot more dynamic. And also, Hopper also gets some great badass moments where he's kicking Demogorgon butt. I really like those. He doesn't only get one fight against a Demogorgon, but two fights against a Demogorgon. And in the second one, he's literally wielding a sword. How more epic can you go? That was excellent. I really, really liked it. And yeah, don't get me wrong. Joyce is great. Murray is great. All the other actors and all the other characters in this storyline are also great. But the focus is 100% Hopper, and Hopper kills it. Now, the third storyline that I would like to discuss is everything concerning Eleven. And, you know, this storyline includes people such as Eleven, Dr. Brenner, Dr. Owens, and, you know, Jamie Campbell-Bauer as a friendly orderly who ends up being One/Vecna/Henry Creel. This story was very good. I really liked Eleven's story. I thought it was, you know, very mysterious. I thought, yeah, it was really interesting to see Eleven, you know, looking back into her memories and going back in time through this weird flashbacks and, you know, just realizing what happened and piecing together pieces of her past that she just, you know, decided to forget due to how traumatic they were. That said, even though I really liked Eleven's story throughout this season, I felt like it was a lot of setup. You know, it's a lot of Eleven going around and, you know, finding out stuff and talking to people, and, you know, she's training and she's getting her powers back. And yeah, most of her storyline is pretty much just setting up the table for season 5. Millie Bobby Brown kills it. She knows Eleven inside out, and she gives us a great performance. But once again, this story is just set up. You know, they're setting up everything. They're giving us some reveals. But I think, you know, the great stuff with Eleven is coming in Season 5. Now that that's out of the way, there's someone else I want to mention from this storyline, and that is Dr. Brenner, who, if you guys don't remember, Dr. Brenner supposedly died at the end of Season 1. Last thing we saw of Dr. Brenner is we saw a big Demogorgon jump on top of him and start munching on his face. And, you know, everyone assumed that was the end of the character because a Demogorgon jumped on top of him and started attacking him. But now here, apparently he's alive. And I was really excited when he came back. I don't know how he survived getting attacked by a Demogorgon, but fine, you know, I'll give it to them just because I really like this character and I was very excited to see him back in the mix. That said, I was a bit disappointed with the fact that they bring back Dr. Brenner just to kill him once again a couple of episodes later. I don't know, that felt a bit unnecessary. Like, I feel like they just brought back Dr. Brenner just so that he could give Eleven her powers back. And just so that he could guide Eleven in her weird flashback sequences. But I don't know. I feel like they could have done a lot more with this character. You know, there are many more mysteries that still need answers. And Dr. Brenner knows a lot of stuff about the Upside Down and about this telekinetic children. That said, even though I wish they wouldn't have brought back Dr. Brenner just to kill him, I still think his death was really cool. And, you know, his death sequence, his final moments where he frees Eleven and he has that final conversation with Eleven, that was very powerful. That was very cool. And the fact that Eleven didn't give him the closure and didn't give him satisfaction and just walked away and said something like, goodbye, Papa, that was great. That was very badass, and I really like that final scene. But once again, I just wish they would have kept him, kept him alive for a bit longer. Now, the final storyline that I would like to discuss when it comes to Stranger Things Season 4 is the story of everything that is going on in Hawkins. And, you know, this story includes characters such as Max, Lucas, Dustin, Steve, Nancy, Robin, and Erica. But it also includes newcomers, new additions to Season 4, which are Eddie, the leader of the Hellfire Club, and Jason, the leader of the basketball team, and, you know, of course, all of his teammates and all the other members of the basketball team. And this storyline of everything that was happening in Hawkins, this was by far my favorite. And the reason why this storyline was my favorite is because this is the one that is directly tied to Vecna. Vecna is in Hawkins, he's wreaking havoc in Hawkins, he's killing people in Hawkins, so it makes sense that this storyline is going to be the most intense and the most exciting and the most thrilling. Now, when it comes to discussing the specific characters from this storyline, I have to begin by discussing Max, because holy shit, Max was the beating heart of Stranger Things Season 4, and that is partly due to an amazing performance by Sadie Sink. Sadie Sink absolutely kills it. This season especially requires Sadie to do some amazing stuff and to really flex her acting muscles, and she kills it. You know, she steps up for the task, and I can't wait to see what she does next. Episode 4 of the show, episode 4 of this season by itself, the one that's called Dear Billy, that episode was just absolutely fantastic, and if you ask me, one of the best episodes of the whole show. You know, one of the best episodes of Stranger Things, period. The main reason why I really love Max is because while most characters stagnated, Max thrived. You know, most other characters from the show, they've already sort of reached their story arcs, they've already reached their character development, and I have felt that the show really doesn't know what to do with some characters, but not with Max. You know, Max's character was developed perfectly, they brought in elements from Season 2 and Season 3, and yeah, it felt organic, it felt exciting, and they took her character in such cool directions that honestly, there's not enough praise I could give to Sadie Sink, but also to the writers for everything they did with Max's character in this season. Now that we're done talking about Max, I will discuss other characters from this storyline. Lucas was great. I really liked his conflict, and I really liked how torn he was in between Jason and the basketball team and his friends. Dustin was amazing, as always. He was very funny, very charming. I love this character. And his relationship with Steve and Eddie were amazing, as expected. Now, when it comes to Steve, I'll just say that I love Steve. I think he's a great character. That said, I believe his character has stagnated a bit, you know. I feel like he already completed his character arc, and now I don't really know where else the writers are going to push it and where else they're going to take his story. That said, I'm still really enjoying his character, and I still think he's great. Then you also have Nancy as part of this group. And, you know, Nancy, as always, she is, you know, very strong, very independent, and also very smart. except when she refuses to shoot Vecna in the head during the final confrontation in the last episode of the season. But apart from that, she's very smart. Trust me. Now you also have Robin, who is a lot of fun. Maya Hawk has a special ability to add levity to even the darkest moments. And the last returning character who is also a part of this group would be Erica, who is, you know, Lucas's younger sister. And I thought Erica was great as well. Now, when it comes to the new characters that were introduced to this storyline, I have to highlight Eddie. I thought Eddie was amazing. I really, really loved him. He was unique, he had a strong personality, and he was just all around a great, great character. That being said, considering that, I was very sad about him dying at the end of season 4. Sure, it was a very cool moment. It was a very selfless, heroic sacrifice. It was very epic. It was very badass. But I wish they wouldn't have killed him after having just met them at the beginning of this season. Like, I feel like his character had so much potential and he was so, so cool that I just wanted to see more of him. And yeah, the other reason why I wasn't the biggest fan of Eddie dying at the end of season 4 of Stranger Things was because I don't even think his death bought the team that much time. Like, the whole reason why Eddie decided to sacrifice himself was because apparently he was going to go kill a bunch of demo bats. And, you know, he believed that killing those bats would save the team a bunch of time. But he wasn't even the one who stopped the bats. Like, you know, he fought a couple of them and he killed a couple of them. But then the bats killed him. And then, you know, it is Hopper in Russia burning down the Demogorgon. That is the thing that destroys the bat because, you know, they're all a hive mind. So they're all connected. So, yeah, you know, that whole thing just made Eddie's sacrifice feel even dumber, you know, and even more necessary. Yeah, the fact that his sacrifice meant nothing, and, you know, even if he wouldn't have sacrificed himself, the bats would have still been stopped by Hopper. So yeah, I wasn't the biggest fan of Eddie dying at the end, and that made me very sad, but once again, a very cool moment, very epic, and very sad. Now, when it comes to Jason and the rest of the basketball team, who are, you know, other characters that were introduced just right here in season 4 of Stranger Things, I really like these characters. I thought they were great antagonists. I thought Jason's connection to Chrissy worked perfectly and tied him into the story in a perfect, seamless way. That said, I wish we could have known a bit more about the other members of the team. Because, you know, when you think about it, you know, all four of Vecna's victims throughout the show, Chrissy, Fred, Patrick, and Max, you know, you get to know a little bit of each of them, and you get to know a little bit about their traumatic past and their traumatic experiences, and, you know, you do get to see a little bit about their lives before they are eventually killed by Vecna, you know. For Chrissy, you see some visions of her mother and her father, and for Fred, who is the little kid who worked on the newspaper with Nancy, you get to see some visions of a car accident that happened in the past. And, you know, same with Max. You know, whenever Vecna attacks Max, you get to see some great visions of Billy and the stuff that Max has been through. That said, with Patrick, who is one of the members of the basketball team, we don't really know much about him. We have no idea how Vecna's hunting him. We don't see any visions from his perspective. So, yeah, once again, I thought that was a missed opportunity. I wish we would have known more about the whole basketball team and, you know, other teammates, not just Jason. That being said, the other thing that I wanted to mention is the very, very end of the show. And I thought the ending was great, and it set season 5 perfectly. First of all, you have portals opening up all throughout Hawkins. You have the Upside Down leaking into Hawkins, and you know, you see plants dying in the real world because the Upside Down is coming. You see the storm, you see the lightning, you see the red light, you see the shadows. And, you know, it's a great ending. Once again, it sets up season 5 perfectly. The Upside Down is now coming to Hawkins, and that is a really, really exciting idea. So yeah, in conclusion, season 4 of Stranger Things was a great setup for season 5. It has the best villain in the whole season, and Max shined as the heart of the show. If I were to give it a score from 1 to 10, I would give it an 8 out of 10, which means I think it was really, really great. And that is it for my review of Stranger Things Season 4. Before we leave, before we finish this show, it is time we go into another musical break, and this time we will listen to Stranger Things Season 4's most popular song, and this song, of course, is Running Up That Hill. And here it is. Just everybody, and welcome back to Take One. This is your host, Juan Pablo Sa, talking to you from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. And that is it for this week's episode of Take One. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and please come back next week for our next episode, in which we will be discussing and reviewing Thor: Love and Thunder and The Boys Season 3. But until then, goodbye.
This is John M. Bennett, and you are listening to CITR FM 101.9 in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
One love, one choice. got some things to say. Never mind, I'll just go to bed. Left unread. At least I get the comfort of knowing you saw it. Maybe I deserve better. I should go for better. But you are just so comforting to me. Left unread. At least I get the comfort. At least I get the comfort. Bright screens dull my eyes. Hope you'll call tonight. I know you won't. I'm on my own. You'll text me at 1, then call me at 2. I'll be ready by 3, then over by 4. So comforting to me.